Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 12 of the Yes And Podcast, the weekly yap. I'm your host, Travis Thomas, and this is the first dozen of the weekly yap, and I have to be honest with you, I look forward to this more than anything throughout the week, work week-wise. I don't want to insult my family. But as far as what I'm working on a day-to-day basis and a week-to-week basis with Live Yes and the public speaking and the training and the coaching, I love doing the weekly yap. And this is my opportunity to not only share some inspiring ideas myself about what it means to live yes and, but it's an opportunity for me to interview such a diverse and dynamic group of people out there, whether they're speakers, teachers, everyday people, trendsetters, celebrities, and have them share what it is about their life, which is all about responding to adversity, living with yes and, how they work themselves through the tough stuff, through the goose spots, how they get themselves unstuck. And so this is my opportunity each week just to find and be inspired personally, but hopefully share stories with all of you. And so that's why I do this weekly yap. And for me, it's like a kid in the candy store, getting to meet interesting people and share their stories. And today's guest is a special, special guest. His name is Eric Patrick Thomas. And before I get into that a little bit, I want to acknowledge and just share my appreciation to everyone who took place, who participated in RAC Friday on November 27th. Our goal was 2015 random acts of kindness shared and posted on the different social media. I think to date, we've seen over about 500 random acts posted. That's not us reaching our goal, but again, it's us kind of taking a step back and going, wow, 500 random acts of kindness. That is so cool, so amazing. And our goal is only to keep growing, getting bigger, and year by year, just kind of spreading the message. And so many people are getting involved to different schools in St. Louis, the Random Acts of Kindness Foundation, and just super grateful to everyone. And thank you so much. And keep sharing. Hashtag RAC Friday. And really, we want to keep RAC Friday going throughout the entire year. There's 52 Fridays in the year, which means there's 52 opportunities to participate in RAC Friday, always with us having a big culmination on that day after Thanksgiving to really spend Black Friday, turn it into RAC Friday. So thanks to everyone for that. And please, all of you listening to the Weekly Yap podcast, if you enjoy it and you like it, from iTunes, please give me a positive rating, write a review, and the more ratings, the more reviews I get, the higher and the more visible the Weekly Yap becomes and the more people who can listen and be inspired by these messages. So hopefully I'm not pleading too hard, but if you get a chance, go into iTunes and write a review or give me a rating, and I would really, really appreciate that. So let's talk about Eric Patrick Thomas. Now, I met Eric two months ago in Flint, Michigan, when I was doing the Gear Up to Lead conference. And Eric is actually grew up right outside of Flint as well. And we're both Thomases. I'm sure we're connected in some way. But Eric's talk was just super inspiring. And I knew that I would want to interview him for the Weekly Yap podcast. Now, Eric and I recorded this conversation last Tuesday. And now the tragedy in San Bernardino happened on Wednesday. And I can't think of a better person to really be interviewing and talking to right now. To just give you a little bit of a glimpse of who Eric is, in 1997, he was just out of high school. He actually had a very promising hip-hop career in front of him, had just signed a record contract, and then at a party where really nothing, you know, was going on out of the ordinary. He's outside at a party at his home, and a random shooting happens. And he's hit a couple of times, wakes up in the hospital to find himself paralyzed from the neck down, and that's his life. He's going to be paralyzed from the neck down for the rest of his life. Now, given the choice at that point to kind of see kind of what the grim future could be, or to fight and to battle, which meant going through extreme rehab so that he could live the fullest life possible. And that's what he chose. And what's most inspiring about Eric's story, and he gets into that a little bit too during our conversation, is his choice to forgive. Now, to date, that was 1997. To date, they still have not found the shooter or shooters involved in that incident. But Eric has moved on and has forgiven everyone involved. And going through what our country has been going through, what the world has been going through with the senseless acts of violence, I can't think of a better message than forgiveness at a time like this. And so I am grateful and blessed to have Eric as our guest today on this weekly Yap podcast. And Eric spends his days now. He is a leading force behind Easy Awareness by Design, which specializes in graphic design, custom apparel, and it's all about inspiring people. In fact, his line of t-shirts and hats have inspire written on them. He's also a huge philanthropist. He's a public speaker, a volunteer, and an advocate for the disabled. He spends so much of his time fighting for those who need help the most. And again, so blessed, so honored to have Eric Patrick Thomas as our guest today on the weekly Yap podcast. Enjoy.
So please welcome to the Yes And podcast, Mr. Eric Patrick Thomas. And Eric, you're in Flint right now. Is that correct?
That is correct. And thank you for having me. I'm in Flint, Michigan. It's a beautiful 40 degrees on a December.
I love anytime I get a chance to talk to someone from Flint. It brings me right home growing up in Flint. And the fact that you're a Thomas and I'm a Thomas, I'm sure we've got a connection in our lineage at some point. But so great to have you on the line, Eric, and taking the time to do this.
Oh yeah, thanks for having me. And thanks for reaching out to me and having me a part of your podcast and your mission.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate it. Well, Eric, it's funny. The more I read about you, I see, and obviously when I go to the website, Easy Awareness by Design website, there's great write-ups about you in different articles. And you are so involved with so many different projects and so many different programs as far as helping people with disabilities and just so many charitable organizations. How do you maintain all of these balls in the air? How do you manage it all?
I have great help. With not being able to move from the neck down, you have to have good people in your circle that are going to be able to do things the way that you need to get them done. They're your arms and legs. And also just, they know your standards. They kind of know your levels of standards. And I try not to turn, if I have the time and I can do it, then I'll do it, because I feel like we're living, so why not apply it to something that's going to be the greater good of humanity?
Excellent. Well, before we started the interview, Eric, we were talking about Thanksgiving, and you shared a little bit about what you did, and you said that every Thanksgiving you like to take a moment to just sort of reflect back on the year and express gratitude. As you reflect back on this past year and everything that's gone on, are there one or two things that are top of mind that really stand out to you?
Obviously, to put it always in perspective, I'm always grateful for being able to breathe on my own and get up and live and have an independent life and have the caregivers and the resources and the supports that I have and a family, and being able to have housing and transportation, food, and the necessities of daily living. Those are our tops always, and the business, and then the highlights, I would say getting the vacation. I finally took a vacation. That's been a long going process. Every year we have a person center plan where we kind of go over the goals of life for the next year and what we're going to do. And it's vacation's
right.
Always been on there, but it's always been put on the back burner based on either maybe financial needs or, the cost. And one of the great things that just popped up out of nowhere is Damon John just, messaged me and said, "Hey, I want you to come out to California and be my guest of honor at my magazine cover party for Inc. magazine, and I want you to come to the set of Shark Tank. And, you know, just, can you do it? And I, don't worry about cost. Don't worry about the cost. I got it. So I was just like, yes. And then I tried to, you know, I had to figure out, like, what caregiver, who could go with me and all the other stuff.
Sure.
But that, I mean, there's a whole hour to take up on the process of getting that done. But that was great.
Right.
And I went to the West Coast. Here I haven't even taken a vacation in, like, 18, 19 plus years or something like that. And I go out to the West Coast. I go to L.A. I'm on a plane. I haven't been on a plane since rehab, since I came home from rehab back in the 90s,
right.
The late 90s. So, and I get to go to L.A., and it's, like, consistent weather, just beautiful. And then I get to go to, you know, the music and art area downtown. That's where we stayed at. And then the cover party and the media, and then go into the Shark Tank and meeting all the sharks and the producers and all the people that put that set together and that show. There's so many people that you don't see because they're, you know, behind the camera, behind the scenes, that put that
right.
together, and got to meet them all. And then Damon also passed out a lot of Inspire stuff to everybody. He was just sharing it with people, and it was great. It was really good. And I got to meet a lot of people from his team and some of the people that he invested in with Shark, you know, that were people on Shark Tank. So
yeah.
that was a huge highlight. But then that was like the pre-vacation, because the D-Man Foundation in August, they sent me out to Vegas in L.A. So we were there for 8 days. Vegas. We flew to Vegas.
Yeah.
And then we rented a wheelchair-accessible vehicle, which was super expensive. Like, you would not imagine, like, $1,200 to rent a vehicle for like 4 days. We took it to L.A.
Holy cow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And so I got to go to Vegas. I got to go to L.A. We stayed right there on Vine in Hollywood. And so I was right there on the walk, you know, the Walk of Fame, got to see everything that the people talk about that you see or that you see on TV or hear about. And then
right.
we went to Santa Monica Pier, and that was like amazing. Being able to go to the Santa Monica Pier on the boardwalk and eating a pier burger and fries and watching the sun go down into the ocean and seeing the ocean for the very first time. There's no words can explain that stuff. I mean, it's like, and we branded it called Journey to Inspire the West. And so as far as
yeah.
I know, that's as far west as you can go except Hawaii. And that's like, that's the end of Route 66 is the Santa Monica
yeah.
Pier. It goes from Chicago, goes from Illinois to Santa Monica. I think that's what it is. It's like 200 or 2,000 something miles. And that's where it ends, the Santa Monica Pier. So it was really cool. I got to see some of my cousins I haven't even seen since the mid 90s before I, you know, got paralyzed. And,
yeah.
You know, I got to see them, and it was cool. So that was a huge highlight. And another highlight was being speaking at Gear Up to Lead. I've been going to the original conferences since they started, and everybody was always saying, "When are you going to speak?" or "Why are you not speaking?" And I was just waiting very patiently. And this is all about timing, because that was the right time to speak. It was the right moment, the right time. And if I would have done it a couple years before, it wouldn't have been like on the Whiting stage. It wouldn't have been so
right.
powerful in the message. So it was all in timing, and it was perfect. I was on stage the time that I was supposed to present, and I had all those kids to be able to speak to. And
yeah,
it was great. That's a huge highlight. That was a huge highlight.
Oh. That's fantastic. And again, yeah, it was obviously a huge inspiration to meet you, but then to hear more about your story there during the Gear Up to Lead. And I'm fascinated by not only just your sense of resilience, but your sense of joy and purpose that you live with today, Eric. And I would love to know, when you look back and 1997 was the shooting that have left you paralyzed from the neck down. So when you look at your life and trajectory that you thought you were on at that point in your life to where you find yourself you know, obviously minute to moment to month later in the life that you're living now. Do you feel like you had the same sense of purpose back then than you have now?
I feel that it just changed the direction of the audience of the stage at the moment. It's, you know, with doing being a hip-hop artist, I was always performing for people, and what I was giving them was good music and stories that were pertaining to real life and what I was going through, or maybe somebody was going through situations, and producing a mood and an emotion. And then the shooting happened, and then I ended up being on, like, when I say stage, I mean, stage is anywhere, you know, it's just an audience, and you're speaking, and this time it's a different audience, but it's a message, but it's a message that could change their life, you know, especially with, like, other people that have barriers or disabilities, and being able to provide some hope or something, because they felt they were alone, because they thought that they were only dealing with the obstacles, and finding out that there's a lot of other people, that they're not alone, and that I was dealing with the same stuff, and I have in the past dealt with the same stuff, and how to overcome it, and how things just don't happen overnight. To give them that sense that they're like, wow, you know, there is life after injury, or there's life, you know, being having a barrier, even if they don't have if they don't have any kind of disability, it's just mental barriers or something, you know. That's so it's kind of like, and it's more raw, like the message, like it's real, it's not sugarcoated, it's not false, it's just, it is what they're going to get, it because I live it every day, I live it 24/7, and so I can deliver it and say, you know, this is it, this, you know, I don't need to. Before, I had to go out and find stuff to write, and I just, you know, speak it because I live it all the time. A little bit different audience, because a lot of it has become, you know, a lot of it was people, like, with barriers, and it was a different message, I guess, at that time. But it's all kind of the same circle. You know, you're speaking, you're performing, you're doing spoken word, you're talking to people, but all in all, I mean, people listen to music because they're trying to bring them back to, like, past memories. It brings them back when their first kiss was, or a heartache, or a death, or a birth, or, you know. And then when you talk, you know, that they're also reflecting, you know, and you're saying, hey, I remember this, you know, and you tell it in story, and they're like, you know what, I remember when I was a kid. I remember when I dealt with this, or I was, you know, I always felt that it was just me. So it's similar, but I feel like I had more powerful impact, and I could really reach a wider audience and be able to help someone more than when we were just doing music. When we were doing music, we had people come, and they would, you know, they'd be hyped, and they loved it and talked about it, but was it changing their lives? You know, was it going back and making them want to, like, go do something or be a better person or want to open up a business there is music out there that definitely inspires people and makes them motivated.
It sounds like your purpose then has been pretty consistent. This idea of wanting to inspire and help people, I guess, to simplify it.
Damon said it best when we were out there in June. He believes that that's always been a part of my DNA. You know, like, like, that's what he was saying. He was like, let me listen, like, tell me about before the shooting, like, how you were and stuff. And you're right, because, and I said, you know, you're right, because when we started talking about it, I would always make sure that, you know, the person was fed with me, didn't matter what, you know, like, if we went to the thing, I'm like, hey, you need anything, you want anything, you come to my house, man, eat food, you know, hey, you need some food, you need something to drink, you know, whatever, you need clothes, whatever, you know, whatever it is, I got you, you know, like, this. Just let me know or ask, you know what I mean? Like, don't take, but if you need something, just, you know, ask me. It's like, hey, can I borrow this? Or if there's something I could do. And I've always been like that, you know, growing up, always been trying to make sure that the other person was, you know, also their quality of life, I guess, was good or something, or something that I had that I could offer to just, you know, and not hold back and say, this is all mine in a selfish way, and say, hey, you know, like, you know, how can I, you know, how can I help? You know, you need a ride home from school, you know, you need somebody to walk with you, you need someone to walk you to class, you know, things like that. So he was saying the different things that I probably did even before when we started talking about it. He was like, I think that it was just there. It's just something that's always been there. It's kind of, he said, it's in your DNA or something like that. I remember.
And so then, so this event then ends up just sort of magnifying it into a different direction.
It intensifies it completely. I think it kind of slows you down. It slows you down and it humbles you and then it puts you on focus. And now you like, you can really see what's real out there. Like what's really real out there, because a lot of, well, there's a lot of things that are facades out there and there's a lot of fake things out there that really have no meaning. You know, I mean, we just talked about Black Friday. You know what I mean?
It's like, right. Right.
You know, that's a prime example on some of the things, you know, it's just, it's, you know, the things that you have, you know, I've said it in my speeches, and I've told kids too, and I said, it doesn't matter. You know, when that shooting happened, it didn't matter what I had or clothes or the cars or the house, anything. All that was just like a mask, you know, or it's just, it didn't matter. It was really about like who you were and how you, what was your character and what you did, you know, like, how did you, those were kind of the things that mattered. Nobody cared about how many pairs of jeans I had or how many shoes or, you know, what style and, or if I had this car or this sound system or this television or this video game system, that was completely, that was nothing, that none of that stuff mattered. And so I think that an incident that traumatic will put you in a place of humbleness. When you lose everything, you're pretty much going to be humble. And you're gaining every little thing that you gain back. It's just like that big of amount of appreciation. It's very, it's, you know, when I eat food, it's not just eating food. It's like, oh, I'm eating food. It's like, man, this is awesome. It's like an experience. It's like going on the tallest roller coaster for the very first time. Like, man, this food is great. Like, this is just, I remember when it was like, can I eat food? And I remember what it was like when I wasn't even able to breathe without a big old ventilator box machine, this life thing called life support. And you're just like, man, I'm breathing, I'm eating, I'm talking. This I would never talk. Now I'm rapping. Now I'm going back into a Dr. Seuss like I used to when I was a child, which inspired me to do hip hop. I mean, or, you know, to do wordplay. It's so. I have people that tell me, will I ever shut up? I'm like, man, you don't even know. Like, they said I would never talk again. They said I would never talk again. So, no. So,
take us into the immediacy after, you know, you wake up in the hospital, you realize what your new life situation is, and you're looking at the amount of rehab in front of you. You're looking at the dire sort of predictions as far as what quality of life will be. So what was it for you? What was a sense of motivation or a sense of inspiration? Because I imagine a lot of people could have really gone a different direction with that being their reality. So what was it for you that allowed you to kind of like stay buoyant and stay above the negativity? And what was it for you that motivated you and inspired you to basically choose the direction that you've chosen?
It's like a three questions in one. First, when something like this happens, you don't think about 9 months down the road or even a week. You think about like every single minute of survival. So you're not thinking of rehab and physical therapy and all the stuff you know now that's going to come in the future. You don't think of that. You're thinking of survival. You know, every minute, like breathing, suctioning, like whatever you're dealing with, people there. Who did it? You're thinking about, okay, I'm not moving right now, but it could be temporary. I've watched movies. I've seen commercials and, you know, people grow beards and then 9 months later they walk out of the hospital like nothing happens and then kick butt. You know what I mean? So you kind of trick yourself too. You know that there's reality of this. You outweigh it. You outweigh reality. Like this could be forever. This could be until whatever miracle happens, or this could be temporary until the swelling, you know, because you're also listening to everybody's trying to be a doctor at that time. you know, well, I've read that on the internet that the spinal cord, you know, it swells, and then when it goes down, people gain movement. You're just listening to everything. It's just all being force-fed. You're trying to pick up something, some kind of hope. So you don't really think about any of that future stuff. Like, what am I going to this kind of, until you get stabilized to where you're like, okay, wait a minute, I survived. Okay. Now I'm going to start thinking about, wait a minute, okay, I'm alive. Am I going to live in the hospital forever? Is this it? And then you start thinking about the plans, like, okay, there's rehab. And they're going to let somebody in the hospital is going to let you know that there's a thing called rehab and physical therapy, and they go through all that stuff. But it's very, been a bare minimum, but you start learning, and nobody, there's no open book. There's no book that gives you the answers either. So you're just kind of learning day by day. But at the beginning, you're just going like second by second, minute by minute, whatever you can hold on to.
What was the sense of strength that you leaned upon during that time?
Definitely survival. I survived, and there's people, I've been to plenty of funerals where there's people that's happened to, less amount of situations have killed people, you know, and I've watched, I remember, you know, going to funerals. I remember, so, you know, like the people that weren't there anymore, like I always say, you know, I live for the people of the past, the people of the future, and for the now. So it's, you know, surviving and having life and being blessed. You know, you are here, God kept you on the earth for some reason. So you don't want to, you know, to do nothing is an insult to the people that wish that they could see their loved ones again or somebody that's not here anymore. You know, they could look at you and go, man, you're not doing anything. You survived. You survived. And, like, I wish, you know, I could see my, you know, mother or my father right now. Even if they were in that, even if they were laying in the bed, I could at least talk to them and communicate with them or something. So definitely, that's a huge motivator. A huge motivator, and knowing that I survived and I was still gaining strength, there was something that I stayed around for, or that there was some mission, some goal, something that I had to achieve, or, you know, life wasn't over, so I had to keep living that purpose. And I, you know, and throughout the 18 years of it, I realized, like, it's not searching for the purpose, because people always search for the purpose. But really, the purpose of life is living the life that you have, and you'll be put in the place to where you need to be. So if a person is put into the, like, being a doctor or a mother or something that's kind of, I might want to say, like, job, but that's kind of like their place, you know, but they got up and they lived the life that they lived. Because I've saw where people try to search for a purpose and it doesn't work out. They're confused, they're cloudy, they're angry, they're happy, they're bitter, they're something, but they don't feel their life is in sync, because they're searching, and it's right in front of them. It's inside them at all times. When they wake up out of that bed, they live, and that's what you got to do. You got to live the life. You got to go outside your box as far as you can and live life that you've been given, and be without, you know, doing something that's going to harm you, but go out there and experience things. Go out there and help people, and you're living your life. That's living the purpose. And it's something that somebody makes so confusing and so complicated that it's really that simple when you start looking at how the dots connect up. Because when you follow the dots, especially like 18 years of dots since the injury, I'm like, you know what? Like, really the purpose is just living. And then I'm going to be put where I need to be put, whether I'm an entrepreneur owning Easy Awareness, whether I'm going to be an advocate or whatever it is, or I'll be placed there. And that's my beliefs, you know, I believe that. But I know, I mean, based on how life's worked out and how I've analyzed and have watched things, it really works out that way and makes things so much simpler than trying to search for the purpose.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's like you say, like, my purpose is to be a scuba diver, a professional skateboarder. It's not really your purpose. Your purpose is just to live. You'll be put in that position if that's your gift.
Having a strong sense of survival being that initial instinct that sort of got you through the beginning. But then from there, obviously you said that, you actually said the phrase, that's just what I believe. And clearly your beliefs are so sort of driven or grounded in this sense of purpose. And I have to say that your description of purpose is is one of the more, you know, beautiful and eloquent descriptions of purpose, as far as, because I agree with you, and I'm someone that actually tries to inspire people into their own purpose. And it is, it's this illusion that people have that purpose is out there, instead of it's right here, right now. So what can you do today? So just, you know, to live it, you know, just to live it today and to live it with whatever you're doing. But I would love, right. Eric, I would love to ask you about, just this sense of forgiveness. And to my knowledge, the shooter in the incident has never been caught. Is that correct?
Correct. We don't even know if it's a shooter or a group of people. So we don't even know that.
Okay. And mm-hmm. So for you, was there a point, or was there actually never a point where you felt like there was a clear conscious choice on your part to forgive the person or persons or event itself? How did you deal with the whole forgiveness factor?
When the shooting happened and I'm struggling in the hospital, you're not thinking about revenge. You're not thinking about, oh, I need to know. The one thing you're thinking about is, like, I wish that the detective would find out what, like, why. It's kind of that why, like, why, well, you know, who did this and why? It's kind of that. But are you really going after, you're like, are you really, I don't think you're really angry at them, because what's done has been done, and there's nothing that's going to change it. There, I mean, there isn't, but at the same time, you have to focus on yourself. You got to work on yourself. There's no way you can work on yourself and try to work on somebody else at the same time. It's not going to happen. And at that time, I wasn't even talking. You know, I was moving my mouth, but I was doing eye blinks and tongue clicks because I was on a ventilator, which is a machine that's life support that breathes for you. So I wasn't even breathing on my own. And when I got to rehab, there was this, there's a priest or a chaplain or somebody that comes to all the rooms and prays for people and stuff like that. And he just came into my room and was like, asked me the question of forgiveness, or do you forgive? And I've never even talked to the guy before or never even seen him. So he asked me, and I was like, you know, I mouthed it. And obviously there was no audio words, but I said it with conviction, you know, just said it, believed it truthfully. And, shoot, it was like the weight of the world was lifted off of me, really. Even though I didn't feel it or I didn't have that, but I've now told, you know, the answer. You know, when I was growing up, and the one thing is you got to think of my beliefs and stuff. I have my mom, you know, she took me to catechism school, so I learned about God and 12 commandments, the 10 commandments, you know, all that stuff. I did my communion and reconciliation, and, you know, every Wednesday we read the Bible.
Sure.
The birth of Jesus, crucifixion, just, you know, everything like that. I mean, my mom had me go to catechism. And then, of course, I was a kid, though, so you're kind of like, you're there for us, and you're kind of learning at the same time until you kind of go off and, you know, learn your own when you start going to church for your, you know, yourself.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like, you know, that's your, if you've made that choice, that decision. So I've always, growing up, I never thought that there wasn't a higher power than me. You know what I mean? It's just always how it's been. But that's my belief system. You know, that's how I was raised, and that's what I believe, and I truly feel it, you know, every day. And I see it. I see miracles happen. I mean, I'm a miracle, but I see it all the time. So, so you know, there was also that sense that we had. So we also had, you know, the things that we learned about revenge and, you know, just hand it over, you know, and let God handle it. And like I said, It was an amazing, just like a cut of the anchor, you know, like a boat being anchored down and then cut the cord. And not only that, but after that, I started getting better. I think the halo came off first. Yeah, the screws came off. I think that was first. So the halo was off. Then they started letting the air down in the ventilator where I could actually mouth words verbally. And I just started progressing and progressing. And before, out of the total 6 months, right before I left to go home, I was off the ventilator and breathing on my own. Eating on my own.
Wow.
Breathing on my own. Speaking, everything. Still weak, but the only thing I wasn't doing was moving from the neck down. So,
yeah.
I mean, and I was teaching people how to do stuff in the rehab, because the people that were just getting injured, they would come to me. I was mentoring them, and now I'm still learning myself, but they'd be like, can you go talk to this person? This person's been shot.
They're yeah.
down here, you know, can you kind of go talk to them or help them out with, you know, how to drive a wheelchair or just whatever I could do. I get and that would be a form of mentoring that they had me do when I was there. So
yeah.
The sense of forgiveness, you know, it was kind of like everything. It was kind of like the drum roll of the earth was rolling. It was like, okay, what is he going to answer? Because I've been teaching him this stuff for 20 years. What's his answer? Because if he answers the wrong answer, it's going to be a rough, it's going to be some bitterness to that. It's going to be, the life's not going to be blessed if you try and hold on to this. Like, I've taught you better. And I feel that I chose the right door, which was, you know, like A or B. And I chose to just let it go, and life's been blessed. I'm sure, I guarantee you that if I would have chose something else, I don't know if I'd be talking to you right now, because I think that I truly believe that things would have been a lot rougher. I think that
right.
there's going to be bitterness. I think that things could have set in. I just knew I had to choose right. I just knew that it was the right choice. I knew it. I felt it. And it was kind of like, here it is. You just went through 20 years of training ground. What are you going to do? What are you going to say?
Right.
What are you going to say?
Right.
What's the answer? What are you going to say? Do you hate this person because they put you in this position? You know, are you that angry at that person? Do you want to kill this person? Do you want revenge? Well, you know, you're not even moving no more. You're an able-bodied 20-year-old, and now you're not moving. You got to have someone go to the bathroom for you and everything. So how are you going to handle this, Mr. 20-year-old that thinks you're invincible, like all other 20-year-olds? How are you going to handle it? You know, you're not even 21. You're almost an adult. Almost an adult. And you're at that age. Like, hey, what's it going to be? And so I chose forgiveness, and that was, or if it's not I chose, I guess, no, forgiveness chose me, something like that.
And I love how you see the connection between, how you at least feel that there is a connection between sort of, like you said, cutting that anchor, and then just the amount of progress and how quickly it happened sort of right after that, as far as your rehab and your recovery. And I just love that here you are, even in the midst of your own rehab and your own healing, you're already living your purpose again, you know, mentoring others and already being able to help others that were going through such a traumatic and tragic event. And so what a wonderful, wonderful inspiration. And again, I mean, Eric, you talk about this sense of forgiveness with such, and I know it wasn't easy, but with a sense of such ease to it. And I can't help but just want to reiterate for everything that we see going on in the world, from in our own little individual lives, from the petty stuff that we carry around to the global stuff that's going on, and your example of your ability to forgive and let go and just live inspired. What an example that is for everyone. And so I thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for noticing. You know, you're just saying about that. You know, when I'm on Facebook and I see people, they just feel like the end of the world or something for that day, but you really don't know, because maybe you don't know that person, but they added you because you kind of had a connection, or you were interesting, or they were following you. You know, we all have people on our Facebook, at least I do. There's people I don't, like, talk to every day, but I kind of, like, see their news feed. And I'm like, oh, this person's really going through it. It's like, what, you know, what can I do? Like, that's why I share my story. Like the Gear Up to Lead one, you know, the story that I did on the stage, it's on YouTube. And I'm like, man, well, maybe that's why I tell people. I'm like, share it. They're like, hey, do you mind if I share it? No, that's what I want you to do. I mean, if it's kind of, you don't know, man, somebody might be thinking about, you know, committing suicide or being bullied or and they want to commit suicide, and then they see, they hear that story, and it could stop it, or it could just make them think, or then maybe they'll reach out to me, and then we can talk, and I don't know, but that's why I wanted, like, billions, you know, to share it. I'm like, just share it, like, share it. You know, don't ask me to share it, because you don't know what it can do or how it can help somebody. And I know it's powerful, because I've talked to people that do not know me, that have ran into me, and they're like, listen, or I was there in person. So I know that it's got some emotion to it. You know, for people that they were crying when they were watching it and stuff or listening to it, so, and they don't even know me. It's not a, you know, it's not a picture of my today's lunch. It's real. It's real stuff that can really have a huge effect on somebody. It could really change someone's life or save someone's life. And that's, you know, if we can save someone's life, then, man, it's like, share away. It's kind of messed up when 5 million people are sharing, you know, cat with a hat, and you're setting off real stuff. And I don't know if it's too real sometimes. I think sometimes people don't want the reality of things too. And it's like, and I speak on the real of things, that is, you know, however it is, I just, you know, you have to, whether it's too deep for them or too hard for them or too much reality, but you have that opportunity to speak on a global scale like that. You gotta say it, then you gotta be able to take that opportunity. Because you may not ever have the opportunity.
Well, Eric, I want people to be able to know how they can connect with you and everything that you're up to better. And so, because we're almost out of time here, but I would be remiss if I didn't allow you to just share with people where they can find your Inspire line, as well as follow you on Facebook or anything that you're up to. So feel free to go ahead and tell people how they can find out more about you and be in touch.
One thing you can do, you can just go to Google and Google Eric Patrick Thomas, E-R-I-C, and then Patrick Thomas. And there are a lot of articles, and my social stuff will pop up, and you can see videos. I have a YouTube channel. I have Facebook. I have Twitter and Instagram, Google+. I don't think I'm missing anything. Oh, a Ustream channel. That's the best way to do it. But then also the website. There's two different there's a few domains, but you can go to inspireshirt.com, and that will take you to the Easy Awareness by Design website, or you can type in easyawareness.com, which is easyawareness.com, and that will take you to the same site. But sometimes it's easier just to say inspireshirt.com, because people just remember that, because they're already seeing it and saying it. And there's our apparel there. On the website, it's also got my bio. There's a link that says Eric P. Thomas. You can see my bio. You can see videos and articles on the website. On Facebook, I'm under Eric Patrick Thomas on Facebook. Feel free to reach out. And if you reach out, let me know that you heard, that you listened to me on the podcast too, so that I can provide feedback for Travis, you know.
Excellent. I will also include those links in the podcast in the description for this particular podcast, so people can reach you that way.
The D-Man Foundation. I'm also an ambassador of the D-Man Foundation, which is music therapy and assisted travel. It stands for Danny's Miracle Angel Network, and you can find that at mydman.org. And I'm doing hip-hop music again, man. I'm making a music project. I'm performing on stage. It's been awesome.
Well, and I got to hear you live in Flint, and it was awesome and fantastic. So so excited to see where you move in that direction.
Yep. Shout out to my friend Kian too. When I first did on the D-Man song in the studio, because it was all like this came to me like out of nowhere with the instrumental. I called him because he's a person that we used to do music together back in, well, actually, you know, until the time I got shot. So, and I knew he was going to be the right person to be able to help me with the song. And he was definitely the inspiration for me to help me break my barrier down in the writer's block and things, and get back into doing what I love You know, I love doing music. I love doing everything, but, you know, definitely I feel very comfortable performing on stage music. It's great to be able to speak and perform now. Before I just perform music, now I speak and I get to perform. It's like, man, it's awesome. It's like a double message, message to the music and message to the speech. It's just, you know, it's great. But yeah, my friend Kian, that's who I went to the first. And then, you know, he came over for a whole day at my house and it was like the old school days, you know, and I knew that we would be on the same page. And, man, he definitely helped me start. I mean, the D-Man Foundation provided that outlet for the studio and everything, and that being able to get back into music. But being able to get over some of the obstacles I was overcoming, that was definitely my friend Kian. So,
yeah.
Big shout out.
Yeah, excellent. Big shout out indeed. Well, Eric, thanks so much for your time. It has been a pleasure. And again, in the future, we'll have to sit down and talk some more. I know we could probably go on for a few hours. But thanks so much for your time, and have a wonderful, wonderful holiday.
Oh, yeah, you too. Yep, thank you for having me. And I'll be promoting as soon as we know when we're going to be putting it out.
And there you have it, episode 12 of the Weekly Yap podcast. I talked to Eric briefly right after we recorded that, and he wanted to make sure that I gave a few more shout-outs that he wanted to share with people. He wanted to make sure, again, back to the D-Man Foundation. Again, check out the D-Man Foundation. He wanted me to share DJ Sandman that he's blessed to have on the track, his longtime friend Kian for helping him with the collaboration with Kelvin Kassab, Marty Sheedy for featuring on the track, and the D-Man engineer and music therapist. So the whole D-Man family. Also to the Easy Awareness by Design team, Jesse Sackman, the multi-talented graphic design artist, as well as Mom, Bob, Dad, and Rita, and all of his awesome caregivers, supporters, mentors, and fans, and everyone listening to Live Yes And. So thanks so much. Hashtag inspire. Make sure his Twitter account is at Eric P. Thomas, Facebook, Eric P. Thomas, Instagram, Eric Patrick Thomas, and the website is EZ. So that's EZ, the letters, Awareness by Design. Thanks so much for listening to this week's Weekly Yap podcast. If you want to help out the Live Yes And podcast, go to iTunes, write a review, give us a good rating, and please keep the goodness coming, and I will keep delivering it to you. Have a great week, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Weekly Yap. Nobody said it was easy. It's such a shame for us to part. Nobody said easy. No one ever said it would be this hard. Take me back to the start.